off and running live here on a Thursday in Nashville. It is Nick Cale and Braden Gall with you for the next 2 hours here on 104.5 The Zone as we take you up until 12 o'clock today, leading you into Blaine and Mickey. And boy, do we have an action-packed, loaded show today. Braden Gall, 440 Sports. Howdy.
How are you, sir? Good to see everybody. Good to be back. Nothing has changed in Knoxville. It's still total chaos, but it's good to be here.
Yeah, I, you know, it's funny is my uncle texted me last night, and he lives in Chattanooga, and he's originally from Pennsylvania, and he's got a house in Delaware, and he sent me this text. He goes, I know you're doing some shows in Nashville. He goes, what is wrong with Tennessee athletics when the women's basketball team is number 25 and the football team is number 3? And I quote from the text, they are as dysfunctional as the Kardashians.
Well, let's hope. And I'm just going to keep spewing this so that maybe we can like speak it into existence. That let's hope that this week is the bottom, right? Like as all these players are leaving, the best players on the team now are leaving. It's not just guys that we're going to move on. And, you know, Jarrett Garantano didn't have a place on this roster, so it was okay for him to transfer. You know, it's obvious that a guy like Bryce Thompson clearly did not want to be investigated, so he left the team to go to the NFL or whatever. You're now starting to talk about guys that were foundational building block pieces in Eric Gray and Henry Toto and even more. There's more. We're now up to like 14, 15 players. You got recruits that are decommitting, early enrollee. Dylan Brooks has now asked for his release. This is all going to be the bottom, guys. And then when the NCAA sanctions come down, which could be, you know, years from now, but like the investigation itself internally could reveal some stuff and they could self-impose some stuff. I'm going to will it into existence that this is the bottom. This is the bottom. This is in fact the worst week in history, and it will only get better from here. I'm just going to keep willing it into existence.
That is obviously the biggest headline of the day with Tuo Tuo, Eric Gray, and others, as David Reed alluded to in the update, entering the transfer portal. A couple of days ago, it looked like Big Cat Bryant from Auburn, who was going to transfer to Tennessee, had removed his social media post about doing so. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and this is not news. This is just an opinion from me. But we're coming off of a 3-win season, and now we have this big fallout. I don't think it's out of the equation to sit here and say, buckle up. I mean, we could be, I'm not going to say this team's going to be a dumpster fire for a decade, but I could legitimately see 3-win seasons for the next 2 or 3 years, barring you absolutely hit the home run hire at coach.
I agree. And it's another reason, because this bad news streak here this week, it's not going to end. Like we still have investigations to come. We still have findings on those things to be released. We probably still have a litigation and negotiation between the University of Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt still to come. There's still a whole other bad news cycle. So just be prepared for it. But know that if this is in fact the bottom, again, all of this, Kevin Steele can finish sixth in the East, guys. Okay. Kevin Steele can finish fifth in the East. Kevin Steele can win you 3 or 4 games. You don't have to rush into replacing Kevin Steele now because he's the head coach. You do not have to rush into replacing him to accomplish what in 2021? Again, with the roster depleted the way it is, you need to the ship is sinking. You need the ship to stop sinking before you start like trying to go a million miles an hour into battle, like you mm-hmm. which is what a new coach would want to do. So I don't know. I think there's just more, the more and more this drags on and continues to unfold, the more and more it makes more sense that Kevin Steele is the interim in 2021. I guarantee you he can win 3 games, okay? Like, if all, to your point, Nick, if all Tennessee is going to be is, you know, 3-9 this year, pretty sure Kevin Steele can accomplish that. So I don't know. I still think that's the smart move. I will keep banging that drum unless you can hire Matt Campbell, unless you can hire – you know, a sitting Power 5 head football coach that is a splash that feels like a lock to be successful. I don't think you should rush it. And no, nobody has a clue, by the way. Let's be honest. All these top 10 lists you're reading everywhere, nobody has a clue. They're completely fabricated.
Tennessee, they're just all the names that keep getting cycled through.
Right. It's just people like us making up names. Like Tennessee doesn't even know who its athletic director is going to be. They don't have a name. Like they may be doing some back channeling to talk to coaches. But there's no names. There's no list of 5 names right now. Like, Like, if you read a list on the internet, it's completely fabricated. Just know that.
All right. Elsewhere in the headlines, we will stay in Knoxville as information came out yesterday. I saw this on Trey Wallace's Twitter. Tennessee will pay Philip Fulmer $37,500 a month, not a year, a month through December 2023. Braden Gall, you and I went about life the wrong way. I've been a terrible football coach or AD because that buyout life is the life to live if you can get it.
Well, let's be honest. Fulmer was a fantastic football coach. There's,
right.
You're right. I've worked with a lot of them, and they will tell you, especially Houston Nutt. I worked with Houston Nutt for a really long time, and I'll be like, Coach, how's the buyout life, dude? And he's like, it's the best, Braden. He's like, it's the best. It's not a bad way to go. Like, Tom Herman's going to be collecting checks for a while. So, it's one of those where, like, I sort of feel like the it's an amicable divorce at this point, right? Like, Fulmer was a bad AD. He was a great coach. Let's just end it there. It's like Tubby Smith leaving Kentucky. Like, Kentucky didn't want Tubby Smith anymore. Tubby Smith didn't want Kentucky, so they broke up and he went to Minnesota. And it worked. And Kentucky got better off for it. Tubby Smith got better off for it. It just feels like an amicable divorce where both parties win. Let's just move on. Unfortunately, he's still on the books, but whatever. It's a clean break. Let's move on.
But are these the kind of things, and all these schools go through it, and some of them have bigger budgets and bigger bankrolls than others, but is this the type of thing that could prevent or has prevented Tennessee in the past from being able to or willing to go to that $7 million a year head coach? I mean, do the math. Philip Fulmer is going to be making bank. Does that impact this school financially for a supposed wish list?
I mean, I guess that's a couple hundred thousand dollars a year. That should be a drop in the bucket for a $200 million athletic department. I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is, and this goes back to sort of the coaching search, and I don't have it. This is not me reporting this. I don't have any inside information on this, but my outside observation would be you've gone about your coaching searches in such strange ways for the last 12, 15 years that you haven't ever really given yourself a chance to sit down with the best candidates that would command those salaries. So, like, when you go hire Derek Dooley, of course you're not paying Derek Dooley $6 or $7 million. Guy's completely unqualified. Jeremy Pruitt, completely unqualified to get that type of paycheck. Probably unqualified for $4 million, which we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
When you get beat by 3 touchdowns 13 times. So they haven't really been in that ballpark, to be honest. And I'm not sure if the current situation will allow them to do it again this time. But again, if you go to Jimmy Haslam or Charlie Anderson or whoever is going to be helping to pay for this, and you go to them and say, look, we are going to hire Matt Campbell for $7 million a year, and we want you to help pay for it, but we're going to guarantee success if we do it. Will you get out of the way and let us do it? I don't know why you wouldn't do that. If you're one of these big, powerful brokers, like, I don't know why you wouldn't get out of the way and say, look, let's go hire a really good football coach. And, mm-hmm. and I'm willing to pay for it, and I'm willing to not have an opinion.
Right.
Because every other time I've had an opinion, it hasn't worked.
Yeah, so. No, very true. Nick Hale, Braden Gall of 440 Sports here on 104.5 The Zone, hitting some of the headlines here in our opening segment. We go from the Vols to the Titans. Yesterday, Derrick Henry was crowned the NFL Offensive Player of the Year. We all know number 12 at Lambeau Field is the MVP. I got to tell you, man, I looked at some numbers last night. Derrick Henry has gone from 110 to 176 carries to 215 to 303 to 378 in a 2,000-yard season. He's going to be 27 years old at some point this calendar year. I love the guy. I think he's clearly a freak. But I'm just wondering, like, at this rate, how much more 1,500-plus type seasons he has.
Yeah. So a couple things you have to consider with Derrick Henry. Number one, he didn't have a traditional workload like Zeke Elliott or Saquon Barkley in his first few years. You just pointed that out. So there's more tread on the tires. He's only had 2 seasons of over 300 carries or more touches, and that was the last 2. So really, he sort of started his career in theory as a workhorse back a couple of years later. He is also an extraordinary human specimen that is unlike any other human we've seen. I think Derrick Henry is like NFL Darwinism. Derrick Henry is the modern human evolution experiment playing out in real time, because the NFL is undefeated at destroying the human body. And Derrick Henry, I think, is going to give the NFL a run for its money. Like, Derrick Henry, he is so physically superior to any other running back I've ever seen that I think we are going to watch the 400 touch theory, which has largely always been the NFL has won that battle. We're going to see if it worked. We're going to see if a human being can overcome that barrier. And I think Derrick Henry can, because I just think he's just a rare once in a lifetime specimen of a human being. And so I think he's deserving of the award. Obviously, I think Aaron Rodgers is deserving of the MVP. I think you can make a case for Derrick Henry, because without Derrick Henry, sort of all the other pieces of the Titans offense don't work. So I think you can make that case, but I don't know. What do you think he's going to survive? Like, I think his body will survive and he'll be able to do it longer than Jamal Anderson or, you know, these guys that have had those amount of touches.
Don't take this the wrong way. I'm not saying Derrick Henry doesn't run physical. He certainly does. But it's not like he's always lowering his head, lowering his shoulder, seeking out contact. I mean, we all know, anybody listening to this show, that his stiff arm is illegal in 49 out of 50 states. So he does a really great job of fending off defenders and just shoving them down like little kids. Whereas I don't feel like he's a true battering ram that almost seeks the contact, lowers down. And those are the kind of things that you think, yeah, oh boy, that could be wear and tear.
I do think there is an art form to falling in the NFL. Like, guys that are just, Emmitt Smith was not a big guy,
right?
But Emmitt Smith knew how to fall. Like, he knew how to avoid the big shot and get to the ground. He was being tackled. It's not like he was, I'm not suggesting Emmitt Smith went down. That's not what I'm saying. LaDainian Tomlinson was spectacular at just, you know, minimizing the strike window and learning how to roll with the hit and go to the ground so that your body's not taking as much of a beating. And like, Robert Griffin III is the worst faller in NFL history. Like, that guy did not know how to take a hit.
He ended his career.
Right. He would throw a pass and be like, here you go. Here's my face. Hit me right in the face. And so Derek does have to acknowledge that, you know, the NFL defenses are undefeated at destroying the human body. It just is reality. And so you have to play for that and plan for that. Not in year one of a four-year contract, not in year two of a four-year contract. We start to get 2 years from now, and he's had four straight seasons of 370 touches.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to have to be a conversation at some point. But I think Derrick Henry can handle it for a few more years, unlike any other human that's ever been able to do it. I think that's what makes him special.
All right, final headline here in the AFC South. The Jaguars have their new general manager. Trent Baalke will be the GM. Urban Meyer, the head coach. Presumably Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback. Baalke was in San Francisco from 2010 to 2016. And if you think that time frame is familiar and it rings a bell, that was those great Niner defenses with Bowman and Willis. That was Kaepernick. That was Harbaugh, the Super Bowl run. Surprisingly, I didn't know, he's been out of the league for 4 years. But a guy that put together a pretty darn good little short-term elite franchise.
I don't know what you think, but you're going to have next year a head coach who's never coached in the league, a GM that hasn't been in the league in 4 years, and a quarterback who's never taken a snap, potentially. I just don't know why that is the recipe for immediate success. I think it's going to take time for them to grow into themselves. I still have major questions if Urban Meyer is going to be successful in the NFL or not. I just don't know. There's no real evidence pointing to a lot of great modern college coaches coming up to the professional ranks and being successful. So I'm fascinated to watch it play out, though. I can't wait to see what it looks like. Jacksonville, again, an organization that doesn't traditionally make excellent decisions. So I don't know. Trevor Lawrence is a big deal. That one is the one reason I kind of go, okay, well, maybe there's a chance here, because that kid's legit, no question.
All right, 615-737-1045. If you guys want to get involved, your reaction, any of your takes on Jeremy Pruitt, obviously Philip Fulmer being paid handsomely, the transfer portal is active, Henry To'o To'o, Eric Gray, amongst others, Jaguars, Derrick Henry. We'll take calls on anything that you guys want to jump in on. But when we come back, the young, and I would say the relentless, on the Vols and the Titans. I've got two names that I want to float out to you guys that I think would make sense. We're back after this. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, 440 Sports, live here on a Thursday alongside David Reed on 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back in. Nick Hale, Braden Gall from 440 Sports, live here on a Thursday. 104.5 The Zone, 615-737-1045. 1045. If you guys want to jump in, at Nick Kale on Twitter, at Braden Gall, G-A-L-L, as we're with you until 12 o'clock today. You know, Braden, I was thinking about this last night, and I'm just kind of thinking of, you know, all right, you know, we're talking about two searches here, one that's of the utmost importance and one that's certainly important as well, and that's obviously the Vols head coaching search and the Titans offensive coordinator search under Mike Vrabel. And I was thinking about this, and I guess we can start with the Vols first. And I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other, but I'm posing the question of, is this guy worth the risk? So I want to throw this out to you, throw this out to our audience. What about a guy like Joe Brady? I mean, this was a guy who, you know, as I channel my inner Collinsworth here, now here's a guy who all he does is work with offenses. And, you know, 2019, he was the passing game coordinator at LSU. Prior to that, he was on Sean Payton's staff in New Orleans. And then this year he gets promoted. Matt Rhule hires him as the OC of the Panthers. And, you know, early on, you know, Christian McCaffrey got hurt. They're dealing with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback, but they had three talented receivers. And I just look at Joe Brady and I ask myself this question. If Tennessee believes, and once they hire an AD and all the people involved in the search that have a say, if they believe a guy like Joe Brady could be the next McVay, Shanahan, LaFleur, Lincoln Riley, is he worth the risk and going against the whole, well, let's go for the established Power Five guy?
Yeah, it's hard to talk out of both sides of my mouth here when I think experience should be the at a premium for Tennessee's decision for a head coach. I want somebody who's got experience. If not, wait till December. He's one of the few names that I like that doesn't have experience as a head coach. You know, Jerod Mayo is another really big one, and he's a guy that clearly wants a head coaching job. He's not interested in being a coordinator. I think what's interesting about Brady is I think he's just an NFL guy. And what I mean by that is, you know, you never know what makes any individual tick, right? What is everybody's individual drive? And if you lay your head down on the pillow at night and he dreams of the Lombardi Trophy and winning Super Bowls, then you can't do that at the University of Tennessee. And there are some guys that just dream about NFL success, and some guys go to bed every night and dream about the national championship. And so I think that's a big question I would have for him is, are you coming to Tennessee to be here for a couple of years to learn how to be a head coach to go back to the NFL? Because he's there are some people that are interested in him now in the NFL to be a head coach.
He's 31 years old.
It's insane. Like, nobody heard his voice prior to the 2019 season with LSU, but he was the architect behind one of the greatest offenses ever assembled. He like parachuted into to Baton Rouge, you know, deployed this monstrous machine that was Joe Burrow's offense, and like immediately got out back to the NFL. So he's only been in college one time. I think he's an NFL guy. So that would be my concern. If I'm going to go that direction, an inexperienced NFL, you know, coordinator, I think Mayo is a better option, because I know he wants to be a head coach, and in college is something we think he wants to do. I don't know if Joe Brady is just going to be there for a couple of years and then bolt for the best NFL job that comes around. And that would be my concern with him. But I think from an offensive schematic standpoint, hard to argue with what he's doing. His protege is now the offensive coordinator back at LSU. Jake Peets was like learned underneath Joe Brady, and now he's the OC back at LSU. So brilliant offensive mind. I would love Mike Vrabel to look at him. Mm-hmm. I don't think that might be considered a lateral move to go from Carolina's OC to the Titans OC. I just think he's an NFL guy.
You'll hear from Jerod Mayo coming up in just about 35 minutes. He was on with Jamar and Ramon this morning. And that's kind of one of the interesting things that I think a lot of people are getting caught up in and trying to figure out is you look at a guy like Joe Brady. Okay, he was with Steve Ensinger. He coached up Joe Burrow. And then you go to the NFL and you look at, oh, this great offensive coordinator with this great quarterback and this great passing game coordinator or quarterback coach. It's kind of like trying to figure out how much success is on the plate of said coach. Because it's like a conglomerate of three really great minds with a great quarterback. And you're like, well, how much of that really was him?
Well, that's the Eagles from the Super Bowl year, right? Where you know Doug Peterson has a lot in charge of the offense. You also had Frank Reich, who was technically the offensive coordinator. But Joe DiFilippo was credited with developing Carson Wentz. That's all gone downhill for all of those guys at this point. But they won a Super Bowl out of the deal. It's same thing with the Chiefs right now. You know, and I know you want to bring up a few names off that staff, but like, is it Andy Reid? Is it just Mahomes? Is it, does Eric Bieniemy get a lot of credit? Does Mike Kafka get a lot of credit? Mm-hmm. How do you disperse the credit? Right. And I think that's always a major question when you have a head coach who clearly is on one side of the ball.
Yep.
Kirby Smart coming off Nick Saban's tree as a defensive coach and a coordinator underneath Nick Saban, that's one of the few that has worked. But generally, offensive minds coming off of offensive coaching trees, like, sure, there's a lot of knowledge that's gained, but how much are you responsible for is always the question, like you just asked. And so we just don't know. I think Brady deserves the credit at LSU. I don't think it was Steve Ensminger. I don't think it was Joe Burrow and Joe Brady. Those two guys put that offense together. Coach O doesn't get any credit for that. he brought him in.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets credit for that, but he didn't draw up any plays.
All right, so let's get to a little bit of audio here. We will hear from Dennis Dodd from CBS coming up in a moment. But first, let's hear from the great Bruce Feldman, who was on 3HL yesterday on the next UT coach.
I think the most viable names that, and I had wrote about in the story at The Athletic, was Jamie Chadwell, obviously a Tennessee native, has done really well at Coastal. And he's a good offensive coach, which, by the way, that sounds really good for a program that's not been very good on offense for quite a while. So he would make some sense. The question is, on Jamie Chadwell especially, he could wait another year. He's still got, his quarterback as a freshman was really good. He has another really good year. He could probably get a more desirable situation than taking a Tennessee program that is going to be hobbled. I mean, there's no way around it in terms of that. I mean, does he want to buy in and take his shot? Because he, again, this is a guy who's never had a Power 5 job in any capacity. Is he going to take his shot at Tennessee when Tennessee is not at full strength? Maybe. Maybe that's as much in his dream job that he wants to do that. But you're not getting the Tennessee that you grew up rooting for, or even the Tennessee that you remembered even Lane Kiffin and Butch Jones had. You're getting a Tennessee in a different place. I think Will Healy has done did a really good job at Austin Peay. He's a young coach, obviously. He's at Charlotte. I think, he's honestly a little more of a gamble than Jamie Chadwell is at this point. But I think it would be hard for him to say no. A couple other guys I think would be interesting here. Bill Clark at UAB, 52 years old. He's a little older than those guys, or a lot older than Will. He's done a really good job at UAB, at a place that he has dealt with disarray and has thrived in that. I think Bill Clark would be a strong option for them. And I think Lance Leipold, who has won 6 national titles as a D3 coach and is now at Buffalo. Now, Lance Leipold has no real connections down there. He's never been around the SEC, but he has won everywhere he's been. Lance Leipold's also in his late 50s. I don't think this is a guy. I think he would have to listen and consider it, and I think you'd get a proven head coach. What they just had in Jeremy Pruitt, take out the, even the scandal part of it, you had a guy who was learning on the job. I think these other guys, I don't think you can, if you're Tennessee, you can go hire somebody who doesn't really know exactly what they're doing as a head coach, because you just saw what happened and it didn't go well. Look, they hired a guy who was in over his head in Derek Dooley, and that was a disaster. I mean, hire somebody who is a proven good head coach. And I think those last two guys I mentioned, both in their 50s, both have been head coaches for a while and done good jobs at places that are not easy to win. I mean, it's really hard to be pretty good at Buffalo, and Lance Leipold did that. I mean, the one wild card name that I had heard last week as an option was Bill O'Brien, who's obviously, now he's with Nick Saban, but I had always heard that some people who are influential in the Tennessee process really like Bill O'Brien. But I just don't know, if you're Bill O'Brien, you sit there and do you consider a job like Tennessee and the state it's in? I mean, he dealt with the Sandusky mess fallout at Penn State, which was really unique, did it for 2 years and then jumped to the NFL. If you're Bill O'Brien, you just say, hey, I'm going to stay at Alabama, ride this Nick Saban thing through, and I'll probably get a way better job a year or two from now. So I think it comes back to the Bill Clark, maybe Lance Leipold or Jamie Chadwell and Healy. I think that those are the realistic options, but you're going to have to do some selling on those guys, especially yep. Jamie Chadwell, to convince him this is the place you should take your shot at in Power 5 football, because you probably will get a less uphill climb job a year from now if you stay at Coastal.
There's Bruce Feldman on 3AHL yesterday, and the Chadwell thing is interesting, Braden. I mean, is he really in a position, knowing his history and connection to the state, where he would say, you know what, I'm not going to take the opportunity now. There could be something better if I just sit back and wait a year or two.
So if you're Will Healy, Lance Leipold, and Bill Clark, I think that might be you might be willing to do that. I'm willing to bet you, and again, as we have to preface all these conversations, there is no actual reporting. Like Bruce Feldman, that's a lot of really good info, and he's right about almost all that stuff, but he's not reporting that there's actual conversations taking place with anybody. So we're just throwing names out here, so that's important to remember. Lance Leipold, I believe, from what I know, would take the job. And I have that is almost reporting at this point. I know for a fact he wanted the Vanderbilt job. I know for a fact he wants to be down in the South and to try his hand in the Power 5. And here's the thing about Jamie Chadwell saying no to Tennessee, a guy who grew up 30 minutes north of town, who's got Tennessee in his blood. There is 0% chance he turns it down. In my opinion, this is not reporting. This is just an opinion. At this point, you don't know when you will ever get that chance again. If Tennessee is your dream job, there's no way you turn it down because of sanctions. Like if anything, you put it in writing and you build up your contract to prevent them from using those sanctions to hold over your head for lack of success in the future, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have one chance at your dream job in life, you don't turn it down. You just don't say no to that. It would be a terrible move for him to say no. Now, again, he got his program put on probation. There's some NCAA issues in his background. He's very inexperienced as a head coach, but he did develop a quarterback and he's won a bunch of games. Bill Clark and Lance Leipold are far more established names that have basically built the best programs in their conference in very difficult situations. Buffalo is impossible to recruit to, and they're the best program in the MAC. UAB canceled football, and Bill Clark decided to stay through that to bring them back. A lot of politics down in the state of Alabama that led to that. Will Healy is also very inexperienced. Those are two things I don't want inexperience right now if I'm Tennessee. You can hire Will Healy or Jamie Chadwell in December. If those are the guys you want, you can hire them in December. And I just don't know why you'd rush through it to make this decision now. I know I'm a broken record on that, but I don't know. Lance Leipold is not going to get people fired up.
No.
But he won six national championships.
But it shouldn't be about buzz and splash and fired up. It should be about substance and a track record.
Totally agree. You never hire someone to win the press conference. That's the dumbest thing you can do in college sports. He won six national championships in Division III. Six. And now he has built the best program at one of the toughest schools to win at in the MAC. I'm sorry, that is track record of building culture to win. Now, is he good enough to win at Tennessee? I don't know yet. I'm not sure. I don't.
But we've seen guys at the lower levels have success, get the big opportunity, and succeed. Jim Tressel at Youngstown State ended up having great success with the Ohio State Buckeyes. Now, it didn't end well. We know that with Pryor and everything else. But going into the 1AA ranks, or now the FCS ranks, D2. I mean, if there's a guy out there that you think is a can't miss, you can't worry about negative PR.
He would. Lance Leipold, again, is as that's sort of like as stable and as consistent and you know exactly what you're getting. And I don't know if that's good enough to win the SEC East, frankly. I think it's good enough to build a really stable, successful, competitive program. Is it enough to win the SEC East, compete with Kirby Smart, Dan Mullen, the best coaches in the world? I don't know. Bill Clark, I like that idea. Really smart coach, experienced, built culture, built one of the best programs in Conference USA. I think that, certainly knows the recruiting landscape of the Southeast. You can make a good case for Bill Clark.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think if you wanted Bill Clark, I think you can get him in December. I just, all these guys that we're talking about here on the G5 level, they're all going to be available in December. Right. Like they're not like Jimmy Chadwell's not leaving for, there's no other jobs open right now, guys. Like this is the only one. So you can kind of like take your weakness here if you're Tennessee and use it to your advantage, which is we're the only job in town right now. Why don't we why don't we take our time with this? Because no one else is searching for coaches. They're not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You guys aren't leaving. These guys aren't leaving. Luke Fickell's not leaving Cincinnati anytime soon. He'll still be there in December. You know, Matt Campbell's going to be at Iowa State in December. I just, you don't have to rush it to hire a guy that maybe not be, he may not be qualified, may not be good enough. Why not give yourself more time to think through that and give yourself more data to analyze? Again, I don't know.
Yep. 615-737-1045. 737-1045. If you guys want to jump in with any conversation or some takes on what you've heard so far, we'll come back. Two things here. One, the next Titans offensive coordinator, I have a guy that I think makes a lot of sense, and I can't imagine that he would be foolish enough or naive enough to go away from what makes Ryan Tannehill successful. We'll get into that. And then also a cancellation locally that I don't think anybody has talked about, and I'm not really sure why. We'll get into that on the other side. Nick Hale, Braden Gall from 440 Sports. This is 104.5 The Zone. All right, 10:44. Welcome back in. Nick Hale, Braden Gall here on a Thursday, 104.5 The Zone. Gerard Mayo was on with Jaymart and Ramon this morning. You're going to hear some commentary from him coming up in just about 15 minutes as we continue to work our way through the mess in Knoxville. One thing I do want to get to, I was thinking about this last night, and I mentioned in the last segment, you know, the young guys, whether that's Joe Brady for the Vols, and then you go to the Tennessee Titans, and I still can't get over, like, I'm trying to wrap my head around what you need to do to keep Ryan Tannehill performing at the level that we've seen. So
two words, Derrick Henry.
Yes. Keep him healthy. You should get a productive Tannehill. But I remember it was 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, and Matt LaFleur was here. And there were a few people in town that were thinking, you know, he's, you know, auditioning for a head coaching gig, and maybe he was not getting the most out of Derrick Henry and Marcus Mariota. Arthur Smith certainly did. But there's a guy, like, I've said to myself, okay, do I want like a retread who knows he's got no chance of being a head coach that will just put Tannehill in a position to succeed, like a Chen Gailey? And I wouldn't be against that if he continues to extract all the juice from the Tannehill tree. But Mike Kafka is a 33-year-old quarterback coach, passing game coordinator for the Chiefs, and he's been there since 2017. And again, this goes back to what I said last segment about how much success is on certain players, certain coaches, Reed, Bieniemy, Kafka. But that is a guy that I would be very interested in if I'm Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, and I'll preface this with, again, it's more about the strategy than the name itself, right? Which direction the Titans are going here. I think, because Kafka played quarterback at Northwestern and did a lot of that zone read, RPO stuff, kind of before it was really trendy in college football. He was kind of ahead of the curve on that stuff. In fact, Northwestern's offense have kind of always been like that. They were always way ahead of the curve, and they were stealing stuff from sort of those a lot of different places back in the 90s even, and in the early 2000s. He had 150 rushing attempts, but only for like 300 yards his senior season, but scored 8 touchdowns, and now he's learned at the feet of Andy Reid. So he clearly values the threat of the run from the quarterback, which is the modern spread element that's being sort of spreading like a virus, for lack of a better term, into the NFL right now. Like, all of the walls between the college and pro schemes have come crashing down and have disappeared. I think what made Arthur Smith special, because again, 99% of media, 99% of fans cannot walk into that Titans offensive coaching room and understand a word that's being said. We would all need like a 500 level foreign language translator to understand actual play calls, which is why I think ripping on play calling is one of the dumbest things that we all do in the media or as fans.
You're going to need Rosetta Stone, the play calling.
Right. Like, you walk, we know a lot about football, but if we walked into that play calling room with Arthur Smith, our heads would be spinning. Like, we would have no clue what's going on. And so it's hard to analyze, like, does Mike Kafka know how to call plays? Does this guy know how to design a scheme or a game plan or implement a offense? I just look at it from what made Arthur Smith good at his job. And that, to me, the way I would describe it is he blended old school traditional weapons, Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, which are good at power football and play action. And he blended those with modern principles. some motion, some, you know, unique use of the tight ends, our run pass options, the threat of Ryan Tannehill, you know, clearly against against the Texans in the final game, you know, huge use of Ryan Tannehill there. And he has that weapon. So that Kafka might fit into that mold because he used to run the ball a lot as a quarterback. He's learning under Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy that uses its quarterback in that same situation with the threat of the run game at Kansas City. That kind of guy, I'm not saying he's the answer or not the answer, but I'm saying that kind of guy with that philosophy is what I would want to see. Mm-hmm. And I think it's what made Arthur Smith really good.
Yeah, I mean, look, Arthur Smith, I think, you know, the old adage, keep it simple, stupid. Like, I don't think he ever tried to outsmart people. You talk about, you know, marriage and blending two types of offenses. Like, I think he realized, look, I'm going to ride this 245-pound tractor trailer. I'm going to do what Tannehill does well, which keep him in a position where we don't have to have him throwing it 45 times a game because he's not Rodgers, he's not Allen, he's not Mahomes. And, you know, when you talk about a guy like Kafka, it's interesting when you look at coaching trees. You know, everybody has talked about the Belichick tree, and, you know, there's been some whiffs and there's been some successes with the Belichick tree. But I pulled up the Andy Reid tree this morning. Here are some of the guys that have had success: John Harbaugh, Doug Peterson, Ron Rivera, Sean McDermott, Matt Nagy, Spagnuolo, Bowles, Frazier. Most of them head coaches, a couple of them coordinators. Spagnuolo failed as a head coach. Bowles failed as a head coach as well, but that's a damn good tree to pluck from.
No, totally. And Andy Reid doesn't hire, you know, dumb people, right? No. And learning from Andy Reid is like learning from the master at this point. And you know, Patrick Mahomes is a different player than Ryan Tannehill. There's no question about that. Mahomes is just different than everybody. The thing about this offense, I think there's only really one limiting factor that should limit Mike Vrabel's search in this process. And that is you cannot go get a guy from a pass-heavy spread offense. Like, that's not going to work. You have Derrick Henry. You have Derrick Henry. You have to build your offense around Derrick Henry. So you have to be – the only limiting factor in the search for a coordinator, in my opinion, is you have to want to run the football. Like, that has to be at the core of your foundational beliefs. You can sprinkle in all the eye candy – and you can make it as complicated as you want, but you have to be able to run the football with Derrick Henry, or want to, mm-hmm. to even really be considered, in my opinion, to come in for an interview. Now, again, I think what made Arthur Smith special is that he took all these modern principles and sort of figured out a way to blend traditional weapons with modern principles. And I think that's the goal with this particular set of personnel, because they're not going anywhere.
Yeah,
Derrick Henry and Tannehill are locked in, and that's it. You've got, these are the weapons. They've been very good. How do you deploy those weapons?
Yep.
And so I think that's the keys. You got to have a guy who wants to run the football, but after that, you need some creativity. And that's, I think that's what Arthur Smith was great at. And who knows if that's Mike Kafka, you know, like Keith Carter, I believe came off the Kyle Shanahan tree. The Shanahan offense is a really nice blend of all that, right? Lots of funky formations and eye candy and double tight end sets, all the stuff Arthur Smith liked to do, throwing out a 13 personnel, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that's what made that Shanahan offense so dangerous last year getting to the Super Bowl, was they're using Kyle Juszczyk like a like a superstar. But it was about physical football, running the football, and then creating these modern passing schemes and out of play action. And that's what the Titans are really good at. I think that's the direction they should be going.
Look, the reality is the Tennessee Titans are a steakhouse, and they're looking for a guy with a track record of putting out high-quality beef. We're not serving fish tacos. We're not doing a taco truck and sushi and all this other stuff.
I love fish tacos.
This is a meat and potatoes offense, right? I think it's the best
But that's a fascinating way to describe it, because it's like meat and potatoes ingredients, but it needs to be cooked up like a 2020 swanky restaurant. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's got to be – like because, again – the genie's out of the bottle, the hay's out of the barn, tubes, you know, toothpaste is out of the tube, whatever you want to call it. The spread is here to stay in the NFL. It's not going anywhere. It sells tickets. It drives interest in the sport. It creates scoring, you know, all that stuff. Why the rules are changing to help the quarterbacks and the receivers and blah, 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 blah. All the same stuff. That's never going to change. The spread is here to stay forever. The question is, you cannot just ignore traditional things that have been successful in the league. Mm-hmm. In particular on this team, because this team has got weapons that are very good at that. And so you have to be able to run the football with Derrick Henry, but you cannot ignore the spread altogether. Again, that's the marriage. Traditional weapons, modern scheme. Who can do that best for you? And that's Arthur Smith was brilliant at that. He would line up in, you know, two tight ends with two, you know, 13 personnel and be throwing to a backside, you know, crossing route in breaking slant route with AJ Brown because the entire defense was fooled, you know? So it's that blend of modern and traditional that I think makes him special.
615-737-1045 is the number at Nick Kale on Twitter, K-A-Y-A-L, at Braden Gall on Twitter. We'll come back. I'm only going to spend like 3 minutes on this, but I feel like it's a story that should be discussed that hasn't been discussed. And it's not so much about the sport itself. It's the decision and the reaction to it. We'll get to that on the other side. Nick Kale, Braden Gall from 440 Sports. Hour two next on 104.5 The Zone.